Okay.
That Shazam will say, I'm listening to the Beatles.
All right, I can't wait. All right, Pete, what's your genre?
How about power pop?
Okay, power pop again.
Loving it?
Okay.
Again.
It's Pete versus Shazam. This is it. It's man versus machine.
Okay, on your mark.
Okay.
Get set, go.
Oh, it's the record.
Very good.
It's, what's the name of that song? Girl in the Golden Disc.
No, I'm sorry. The name of the song is Teen-O-Rama.
Teen-O-Rama.
Yeah, sorry.
He did get the band, though.
He got the band before Shazam
He got the band before Shazam. Pete, I say you win. Come to the record fair, and I'll give you a free record.
Okay, thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Pete. Bye-bye.
Okay, can I try to do my Ringo Starr?
Yeah, let me operate Shazam.
Okay. I wish I could hear it first. Bum, bum, bum. Wait, it's...
Yeah. Maybe it's on YouTube. Hang on a second.
Ding, 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 ding. I can do this. Shazam won't know what hit it. Is it the Beatles or is it Andy Breckman? I'm not going to even tell our listeners. See if they can guess.
Here we go.
Okay. Ringo's drum solo?
Oh, hang on a second. I got to turn off the damn record. Oh, that's somebody else playing it. That's no good.
Do, 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 do.
Here we go. Top 10 drumming moments of the Beatles.
Did I tell you my Morse Day story yet?
Yeah.
Here it is. That's it. That's it.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay, let me just hear it. Here it comes. Wait, I have to study this. I have to go to school on this. Wait, what did you do?
Oh, that's just the stupid...
Wait.
It's the video. It's the... All right, hang on. Let's try this.
There it is, Ringo Starr.
Oh,
that's a remix of it.
Strawberry Fields. Come on, give me... Ringo drum solo.
Doom, doom, doom,
the
doom, doom, doom.
End.
Wait, I don't. Okay. Wait, hold on. Doom, 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 doom. I can do it.
Here we go. This
okay,
is it.
Okay. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. It's coming up. I've got to study this. Don't distract me. I'm trying to focus. Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to operate Shazam. All right, now Andy's going to see if he can do that drum solo so perfectly that Shazam will recognize it. Ready?
Is it Andy or is it the Beatles?
Okay, here we go.
And then after the drum solo, I'll tell the listeners which one it was.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Here we go. One Republic?
No.
Native Summer Tour?
No.
Oh, no, that's an ad. Oh, it says we couldn't find a match.
Damn.
Yeah, sorry. Nice try, though.
Do you think a good drummer on a good set of drums could do it?
Yeah, maybe. Do you want to play another drummer and see? There is actually...
I don't know any other drum solos.
No, but here's a guy doing that. Here, let's try this one. Yeah, let's try it.
You mean it's a guy on YouTube imitating this drum
solo? Oh, he's playing it with the Beatles, though.
Oh, he's playing it along with Ringo?
Yeah.
So it's a picture of a guy.
It's a video, Andy.
It's a video of a guy playing drums along with Ringo's drumming.
I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know. It's like
but you can't hear him.
Yeah,
he's just moving drumsticks around.
Yeah,
I love this video.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Wait, how many hits does it have?
I already erased it.
Can we call him? No. To, can we invite
it's
him
too
down?
Late. The show's over.
Is there any way to have for him to perform live at the record fair?
No, it's too late.
You can play music and he can.
It's time for YOY with Andrea.
He can pretend to drum along.
This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope.
Hey, we'll see you at the record fair. Where is it, Ken?
Online at WFMU.org.
Where is it, Kenny, this year?
In Rockland County at 91.9 FM. It's at the Armory at the corner of 26th Street and Lexington Avenue. Not the Metropolitan Pavilion, not the Uptown Armory. The Armory at 26th and Lex. Friday, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m.
What are you going to be wearing?
Jeans and a t-shirt. Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m.
We should coordinate things so we don't end up showing up wearing the same thing.
Early admission is Friday, 4 to 7 p.m., by the way.
Hey, mention you're a fan of the show and you get in for free.
That's not true. That's not true. Thanks, everybody, for playing the game. Congratulations to all those who won. And stay tuned for YOY. With Andrea.
Where is Andrea?
There. This is YOY. I'm Andrea Salenzi. Landed today successfully from South Carolina. My flight was canceled last night. I was on family vacation. Oh, you guys are going to hear about family vacation really soon. I have to talk to you about it with a licensed professional first. But once I'm done with that, then you guys will get all the juicy details. Just kidding. It's too painful. But I'm back. Flight land, got up at 4:30, flight landed, went straight to work, went straight to WFMU, and now I'm just going to monologue about my problems for the next hour. No, that's a horrible idea. But I do want to tell you how my dog is trapped at the dog sitter and how my grandma experienced mild heart failure this weekend. So please send your get well wishes to my grandma on the WFMU playlist page, WFMU.org, and I will read them off to her tonight. Before I give her a shower, That's what's going to happen. But, yeah, I have an idea for tonight. I have a thing to talk about that isn't just me. Joining me here in the studio, please introduce yourselves, ladies, while I grab at my laptop.
Hey, I'm Eleanor Kagan.
And I'm Ksenia Yarosh.
We host a film podcast called Bonnie and Maud. And
it's at bonnieandmaud.com.
Yes, and we're on iTunes. We are a femme-centric podcast, so all that means is we are two ladies who watch movies and talk about them.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm a big fan of podcasts and a big fan of films, and I listen to a lot of them, and I wanted to contribute my view, so I started it.
And we're big fans of your show, Andrea.
Oh, shucks, guys. We were just talking about Randy. It turns out you went to Montgomery College.
I did, yeah. I don't know that we were there at the same time.
No, he's a little older than you. But
yeah. Oh, thank you.
But yeah, so wait. You know, I want to get straight to talking about women and film. And we actually have a great topic tonight. We want to find out if you've ever been on a movie date that was a horrible idea. Maybe the movie brought up something uncomfortable. Maybe just it was too soon for a movie and something went wrong. We want to hear those stories. I have the wonderful Nick the Bard call screening at 201-209-9368. So we'd love to fill up the phone bank while we gab. But first, I love origin stories of podcasts. So tell me, you guys are on 2 years of doing Bonnie and Maud together.
Yes.
How did it get started?
Our two-year anniversary is in June. How did it get started? We knew each other through friends of friends, and Ksenia is very active in the scene of seeing and planning screenings of bad movies in New York, and does a zine with her husband called I Love Bad Movies, and also organizes the Brooklyn Zine Fest, and I have a background producing radio. So I was interviewing you guys on the floor of my apartment, you guys being Ksenia and Matt, about the Brooklyn Zine Fest, and we were like, this is fun.
Yeah, I think towards the end, Matt was like, hey, Ksenia, haven't you wanted to start a podcast, which has been sort of something that I had been talking about for years prior, but I don't know that I actually plan to follow through with it because I have no radio training. So it was like a dream. Until I found the right person.
Aww. It was sort of like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
You should ask her. And you asked me. And I said yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True and love.
And so we basically just sit in my apartment week in and week out and talk about everything. I mean, we don't just talk about new movies. We talk about classics. We'll do comparisons. We don't necessarily also talk about, quote unquote, women's movies. And our, you know, we cover TV as well. And, you know, We're interested in B-movies, like schlocky things and like classics like Network and His Girl Friday and Alien. And I don't know. So we try to cover it all.
Yeah, I think a big factor is like we just want to have a good time. Like we want to watch interesting things and have an interesting conversation. Like we actually rarely bring academia into it or like film studies. It's sort of just like a lot of questions like, why do we feel a certain way about this character? Or, like, you know, why did this certain movie stick with us from adolescence?
And I love that. It's that, you know, I think it would be a really boring show if you're like, we can only talk about movies that pass the Bechdel test. And something that I think you guys do really well is you could pull out a B-movie by a kind of sexist director and then find the themes and the connections that resonate to female listeners.
Yes, that particular movie, that particular B-movie by a sexist director was Hard Ticket to Hawaii by Andy Sedaris. I don't know if any listeners out there are familiar with it, but we just decided to watch it. Ksenia suggested it, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to hate this. Like, the movies that he makes are these, like, all the women have huge breasts, and they come out a lot, and there's, like, really superfluous softcore sex scenes, and it's just, like, running around shooting people. But what we uncovered was a touching story of female friendship and empowerment.
I mean, really?
And I'm being serious. I swear to you, there is that in there.
They are in a jacuzzi topless, but they're talking to each other, and they're talking about how to solve the latest diamond heist or whatever happened.
So it was a really touching movie.
I love that. I mean, that's like, that's a thing that can bring me to tears sometimes. It's like those movie, those moments between women. I feel like I can't, there are very few like couples in film and television where it resonates so deeply that I feel moved, but female friendships in movies, those are the ones that stick, and you're like, oh, I want, like, you take something from it, like a lesson. I feel like that's the whole reason I ever started watching and continued to watch Grey's Anatomy. and there was one of the longtime characters just left that show, Sandra Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they, so the, like, Sandra and her, the Sandra Oh character and her best friend, first Meredith Grey, had to have their like goodbye moment, and it was perfect.
I saw that in the news and I was like, I didn't even realize it was still on.
Yeah, no one should watch it, except for that I think I was going through a period where I just like, where I was missing a female friendship or didn't have one. Mm-hmm. And then I had to check in on how they would wrap up a scene like that. So I don't know, I feel like I love the concept of the show. Why do you think a show like this is necessary? Like, why shouldn't just...
I mean, like I said, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and, you know, I don't want to dismiss these conversations because I love The Flophouse. I love a lot of awesome and bad movie podcasts.
Let's hear a few recommendations.
Film Spotting
is really good.
Is one that I really loved. I think I've like listened to some of those episodes several times. Like I said, The Flop House is a classic.
Wham Bam Pow is one that I really like.
Oh yeah.
That's hosted by two ladies and a dude.
Yeah. Mm. But I think the downside to a lot of these podcasts is it's, you know, two to three guys talking, and inevitably they're just issues and topics and movies that they miss, because they're not ladies and they didn't grow up as little girls watching The Craft and Now and Then and all these other films that we're a little more familiar with.
We're just trying to offer a different perspective. And actually a lot of great film podcasts have cropped up recently or have been going on for a while that are hosted by, you know, voices that are maybe more marginalized or voices that you're not hearing in podcasting that often. And so Wham Bam Pow is a great one. There is Faculty of Horror, which is a horror movie podcast hosted by two really smart women out of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere.
Yeah,
Toronto,
that's a
I wanna
great
say.
One, because they actually mix kind of jokes and casual conversation with a little more academia.
Mm-hmm. Black Girls Talking is more of a pop culture podcast, but it's really funny and another one I would recommend. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of perspectives out there. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. And just, you know, the topic of women in film is a debate that has been, you know, it's a topic of conversation that has been continuing for a very long time. I mean, the numbers, just statistically, women working in film is a low number. And we are, you know, excited to talk to women working in the film industry, either Absolutely. On screen or behind the camera, and or, you know, doing something involving film like programming, and, you know, just kind of see who is there and, you know, what they like and what they're into and what about film excites them. And you know, we're yeah. all in it because we love movies, because they make us feel great.
Yeah,
or they don't always make us feel great, but you know what I'm saying.
We've been really lucky to have female film projectionists, curators,
filmmakers,
directors, writers on the show. I mean, most of them are really early in their career, but hopefully our podcast launches them into the big leagues.
Yeah, and I just want to hit on, like, agree with one point, which is just, I remember the very early days of podcasts when there were, like, five podcasts that existed that were kind of worth listening, and so many of them were hosted by dudes, and I would always feel so isolated because you would hear just, like, one joke about testicles after another, and you would just be like, this isn't speaking to me.
Oh, we make those jokes. I'm kidding.
You guys are just obsessed with it. But there's this, like, style of male joking where you go, where you take, like, the last thing that he said and then you throw it back at him. You're like, mm-hmm. you'd see a movie that does that. Yeah. I always see movies that do
that
thing.
That's what she said.
You're just like, oh, let's just get to the ideas and the substance and the feelings and the human connections. But so I love what you guys are doing. And it just reminds me, it's a golden era of podcasting. There's so much you could be listening to right now.
Totally.
Don't touch that dial. We're taking your calls tonight at 201-209-9368. This is YOY on WFMU. I'm Andrea Salenzi. We want to hear about your worst movie date idea ever, or a movie you watched with a partner and things just got uncomfortable. So we're stacking up those calls. Call screener Nick the Bard is working hard. So everyone, when people talk about women in film, they always go, blah, 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 the Bechdel test. Does this pass the Bechdel test? What is this test and why should we care about it?
Is it the Bechdel or is it Bechdel?
Bechdel.
I have no idea. Not in film.
Bechdel test.
Bechdel.
It's named after Alison Bechdel, who's a cartoonist and author and writer and smart lady. She had a comic series called Dykes to Watch Out For. And in it, there was a particular scene of two people going to the movies, and one was saying, I will not see a movie unless it passes these three specific rules, okay? So rule one is there more than one woman in this movie? Rule number two is, do they talk to each other or interact in some way in this movie? And rule number three is, do they discuss, you know, if they do talk to each other, are they discussing something other than a man?
And isn't there a part where they also have to be named? Is that part of it, or is that an add-on?
I think that's what this test is aiming for.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Right. It's like when it comes to female characters, do they have names? Do they have a backstory? Do they have motivation? Do they have complex emotions, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, there have been more extensive tests that have evolved sort of as a result. It's sort of funny. When you Google it, it's just this like one page comic, and it has launched so many amazing discussions.
And even recently in Sweden, it is now used as an actual rating in film. Like a film
Whoa.
Gets an a film gets an A if it passes the Bechdel test.
Well, is that a good thing? Do you think that this is a perfect test for film?
No.
Bechdel test?
It is not perfect. I think it's, you know, it's a great place to start the conversation around how female characters and how women are being portrayed in film. But no, it's not everything. There are great movies that do not pass the Bechdel test, and then there are movies that you would expect not to pass it that do. The aforementioned Hard Ticket to Hawaii definitely passes the test. There are some really sexist moments in it. Funnily enough, Birdemic 2, The Resurrection, passes.
So when the chesty women were in the hot tub together, they weren't talking about a man. That's what that means.
That's exactly.
No, I think they barely talk about men in that movie. It's a lot about, like, I think they work for, like, a drug busting.
Like
something.
A shipping company.
I don't know.
They fight crime on the side.
But, yeah, it's a lot about fighting crime.
Movies that have failed the Bechdel test, all of the Lord of the Rings series, The Hurt Locker, which was directed by a woman, Kathryn Bigelow. She was the first female Best Director Oscar winner. Or like Before Sunrise, which is like a great relationship movie with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. But
with an
she doesn't
ever
talk to any other woman.
Female character.
Yeah,
but
so
that's
like
the premise of the film is that they're just on a long, beautiful walk talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that goes to show that, you know, the Bechdel test is a great place to start the discussion, but it is not the end-all, be-all of the discussion.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we have a few callers coming through. Joining us now is Will and Annandale. Welcome to YOY.
Hi.
How's it going? Have you ever had a horrible date to the movies?
Oh, brother. I had actually been dating this girl for a while, and we both had a very mutual love of the film Rocky Horror Picture Show, yet I had never attended a shadow cast.
And a shadow cast is when they're up on stage and performing it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of lingerie.
number other. But
you
yeah,
have to throw
gone, but we
things.
Went to the one in, I believe it was, not brother, it doesn't matter. But anyway, I figured I'd have like a couple of drinks beforehand, you know, loosen myself up a bit. I was not prepared to get that loose. I'd heard things about what goes on in a shadow cast. Nothing really prepared me for what I was really about to think. I don't really consider myself like a very really uptight person, but I don't know. When I see people jumping around, I kind of locked up, and they wanted to pull me on stage, and I made some horrible excuse. No. I've totally seen this before, and they're asking me what shadow cast I'd seen before. I really didn't want to get up on stage. I didn't want to have to fake an orgasm. It was just, oh my God. It was
yeah, no one ever wants to do that.
So if you are going to see the Rocky Horror Picture Show and you've never been to one of those before, you're a virgin and they make you put a V on your forehead and you have to go up on stage and either fake an orgasm or do something else really embarrassing, which I imagine for a first date or kind of any date would be quite embarrassing.
Yeah, and it really was. It was getting to the point where I kind of would just lock up. And I was like, I don't want to get involved with this. I want to just watch the movie.
What did your date do?
She just kind of just stared at me and, you know, looked at disapproval.
See, but didn't this have more to do with how much you had to drink than anything that Rocky Horror did?
I didn't even have that much. Maybe two or three, but I just wanted to, like, you know, kind of prep myself ahead of time. But I was not expecting that. It was, oh my God, it was a disaster.
But maybe that revealed that you guys were in a perfect match because, she was more extroverted, maybe.
No, that in fact she wasn't. She was just a bigger fan of Rocky Horror, I suppose. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the movie and the music and everything like that, but I guess not that much, you know?
I guess it's kind of a first date. Sorry, was this a first date or a...
I think we had been dating for about 3 months at that point.
Okay. Wow. So at that point, so it's not your very first impression, but I guess after a couple months, it is kind of it's a bit of a test whether it's meant to be one or not. Can we kind of enter this embarrassing situation with one another and be okay with it? Or is it just like you'll never see each other in the same way again?
See, this seems like a way better test for me than actually seeing a movie. At an actual movie, that you wouldn't get to have those kind of interactions where you would learn about each other.
That's true.
Thank you so much for your call. Great story.
Oh, of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next up is Callie in Vermont, past guest here on YOY. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Do you have a date story involving the movie?
Yeah, I've been going out with someone for about a month, and we were making it a tradition to snuggle up in bed and watch a cute movie, but we decided to experiment a little bit, and we both liked Trainspotting, so we watched Requiem for a Dream for the first time.
Oh my God.
God. And you can imagine exactly how that went.
I think you can hear from our gasps that we're imagining how that went.
Okay, so everyone remind each other of Bonnie and Maude, remind us what goes on in Requiem for a Dream that might be uncomfortable.
Well, there's a dildo, mm-hmm. and there are two women, and then there's a guy who loses an arm.
And a lot of drug use.
Yeah.
It's a dark movie, and you don't feel very good coming out of it. So how did it turn out?
Not well. I don't think we really said anything to each other after it was done. We just kind of immediately turned off the TV and just turned off the light and tried to forget about it.
Wow.
Wow. I'm sorry about that movie. Do you guys think that that's a real thing, that a date can, that a wrong movie can just totally suck the mood out of the room?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are some good movies for making the mood happen?
That's
a good
question.
I was actually thinking about Before Sunset. Like, that might be a good setup because it's so romantic and, you know, it's the ideal date.
Yeah. But it's so much, like, love intensity.
Uh-huh.
It would make me uncomfortable, like we'd had to have a talk when it's over. Like, yeah, about destiny and compatibility. Thank you so much for calling, Callie.
Yep, I hope the grandma Phyllis is feeling better. She's wonderful.
I know. Our thoughts are with her. Okay, bye.
All right.
So on line three now is Chris in Toronto. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello, Andrea. How are you?
Great. You're here with Bonnie and Maude, host of the Bonnie and Maude podcast. That is not their real name.
No, Eleanor and Ksenia.
I'm a big fan of the show. I'm glad we could chat.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I know this Chris.
We know each other.
Oh, brother.
I wanted to call in regarding the bad movie dates, because I have two short stories that I think are pertinent to the theme. One is, I used to live in New York City, and I went on a first date to see the movie Shame, which I think I and the other person were kind of making jokes about. Do you know this movie? It has Michael Fassbender in it.
Was it the was date with your sister?
Later did 12 Years a Slave. Yeah, it's about sex addiction. And we decided to go to it, and we were like, oh, this is going to be really, like, you know, yeah, it's going to be a hard, uncomfortable movie, but whatever, we're both into those kind of movies.
And you get to see him naked, right?
He's straight up naked for like a third of that movie.
How is that not a great date movie?
Not really a terrific date movie, but again, I think we were going into it with the attitude that, like, okay, we both actually want to see it. Like, it'll be kind of funny that we're doing it together as a date. And we went to a later screening, and a couple rows ahead of us was a guy in a trench coat who was actually sitting in his seat in a trench coat. And we were like, oh no, this guy didn't actually, like, come in a trench coat to the sex addiction movie. Like, it's like, this is not a good sign.
It's like,
and
stop
then sure enough, like 20 minutes into the movie, the guy started, started having a party under the big top, so to speak. And I asked her, like, well, what should we go, like, say something? Because there weren't that many people in the theater, and he was, like, a couple rows in front of us. And she's like, no, we can wait this out. And then eventually somebody came in to take him away.
It's like, dude, stop being a cliche.
It's not being a cliche. So there was that one.
Well,
that
is one it was, a cliche, or is the trench coat just very practical in that scenario? Like, you're not going to bring a blanket with you to the movies.
It's true, yeah. At least conceivably someone is wearing a trench coat,
like,
right?
Like, which came first? I don't know. Yeah.
And the other one, I was in high school, and I guess my first date ever, a girl invited me to go see the quantum physics documentary, What the Bleep Do You Know?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Yes, I have seen that movie. It wasn't a date, it was more of a friend date, but we were like, this looks interesting, and then had no clue what we sat through.
It's really weird. It's like not even really a documentary, it's just like
it's
movie.
It's pseudoscience.
Yeah, it's like a spiritual kind of nonsense thing. So she, you know, I asked this girl on a date, and she's like, yeah, let's go see this movie. My mom really enjoyed it. And about 10 minutes in, we realized that this was really not for us at all. It was just like this confusing kind of nonsense thing. So being teenagers, you know, 10 minutes in, we just started furiously making out. And there were like three other dudes in the theater, like just three random guys kind of scattered throughout the theater. And about like 20 minutes later, somebody from the theater came in and told us to break it up and was like, yeah, someone complained. So one of those three random guys complained.
Oh, he was so lonely.
It hurt
his heart.
On the way out of the movie theater, the guy from the theater saw us and he was like, hey, you two, never come back. So there you go,
wow.
Lifetime ban.
Oh, but what else is a movie theater? The second best thing a movie theater is good for is making out in it. How could they ban you from making out in a movie theater?
Did either of you leave your chair?
Yeah. Well, it's the thing. Like, I don't like going on traumatic movie. Like, I've gone on a lot of ones that have, like, I saw Fruitvale Station on a date last year, which was also, like, a bad call. That was the police shooting movie that came out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like traumatic ones can be okay, because then you have kind of, like, a shared trauma where you can kind of, like, have fun later on and be like, oh, remember when we did this thing? Like, it can be something that brings people together almost as much as like a really successful one. It just completely depends on the person, I guess.
That's a good point.
Oh, that, yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for calling, Chris.
Oh, thanks. Big fan of the show.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That just reminded me. I went on a date a couple weekends ago to see Fritz the Cat.
Wait, what's that?
It was the first animated film with an X rating.
Oh, oh.
Inspired by the drawings of Robert Crumb.
Sure.
And there is a bathroom orgy scene with a bunch of different characters. It was very, it was funny. I think we survived. But there's a lot of weird race stuff.
Yeah, you never know going into a movie. I mean, even if you are, if you watch a movie that turns out to have been an inappropriate movie to watch on a date, if your relationship does survive it, I think that actually is a good sign. I am in a long-term relationship, and we have seen so many inappropriate movies that, you know, our relationship has survived, but I would not recommend seeing these movies. Very early on in the relationship, we watched Greenberg, which is the Noah Baumbach movie starring Ben Stiller and Greta Gerwig. And it's very awkward, and there are some really painfully awkward sex scenes in the movie. And, you know, it ends and we just look at each other, and it is the biggest turnoff of all time. So don't go see Greenberg, kids. And the other one was Spanking the Monkey, which is the first film that David O. Russell made. He recently made American Hustle, but his first movie is Spanking the Monkey. And if you're not familiar with it, it's about incest between mother and her son.
You guys knew that on your way, though.
We did know it going into it, but still it's like you're watching this with a romantic partner, and it's just, it feels strange. Even if you, like, are totally comfortable in your relationship, it's very just, I wouldn't recommend seeing it on a date. We were fine, but it's just a weird movie in general, I guess.
I find it's sometimes hard to, like, get those ideas out of your head after a film, because you're still they're still in the back of your head. So if you're going to try to, you know, make out later that night, you just don't want that to flash back through your mind.
Mm-hmm.
There should probably be a 24-hour waiting period after some films. Abstinence period window. All right, so we're taking your calls here on YOY tonight. The topic is the worst movie you ever took a date to or were taken to, that movie that was just a horrible idea that brought up some uncomfortable stuff for you. We want to hear about those memorable movie dates at 201-209-9368, and I'm checking out the comments at WFMU.org. I am joined by Eleanor Kagan and Ksenia Yarosh, hosts of the Bonnie and Maude podcast. Takes on film and television from a femme perspective. And their website's bonnieandmaude.com. Wait, have you ever had a movie date? I knew about Eleanor's, but I actually didn't know about yours, Ksenia.
I have a couple, but I don't remember them being all that traumatic. I went on a date where we watched Dirty Pretty Things, which is, like, about immigrants and intestines, and it's just kind of gruesome and weird and sad. And I remember afterwards the date commented, like, oh, that wasn't a great date movie. There might even be rape in it. But I kind of quickly forgot about it.
Is rape like an instant no-go for most movies with a date?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But people love their Game of Thrones. I am not watching, but it hasn't seemed to bother. It doesn't bother couples from their Sunday night order in, watch Game of Thrones
rituals. I think that's a different conversation. And I also, I don't know. I don't think most people are watching that as an early dating tool.
I think when you're going on early dates with people, you're still getting to know each other. And so there is a lot of pressure wrapped up in movie choice if you do decide to go on a date to a movie. And so, you know, there's a lot of pressure. You don't want to pick something that your date will then associate with you, like, oh, they were the person that took me to see
Transformers,
or something horrible like Irreversible. I don't know. Uh-huh. Anything by Todd Solondz. Like,
yeah, let's go watch 12 Years a Slave and then make out.
Yeah, like, I think maybe if you're picking a movie, you know, and it, of course, depends on who you are and what your interests are and what your shared interests are. But when you're picking a movie for an early on in the relationship date, you know, try to pick something that won't make you feel like you want to die afterwards.
This might be really Freudian, but when the question originally came up, I actually thought of all the awkward movies I've watched with my parents. Like, my parents are really open and, I don't know, they just, like, my husband and I went over there a year ago and we watched I Love You, Philip Morris, which has a lot of really explicit gay sex scenes. But that wasn't even like I'm used to it by now, but I remember being in high school and my mom, stepdad, and I were watching The Princess and the Warrior, and my mom stepped out and it was just my stepdad and I, and there's this like really awkward, terrible hand job scene.
Oh my God.
And the thing is, like, my stepdad has always made fun of me for being squeamish about, like, scary movies, whatever. Like, he just makes fun of me. And so my thing was, like, I'm just going to focus and not flinch and not breathe and let this pass. And I think we also watched the hand job scene in Hedwig some years later. It's just like, these are the things that like stick in my mind.
Oh, I remember those adolescent moments, because you don't want to look away because this is one of the first times you've ever seen sex happening in front of your eyes. But and you don't want to seem into it at all.
But not immature. Like, like, I'm a grown up. I'm just watching a film. This is what's happening. Oh, my God.
So, I remember that feeling of, like, don't move. Don't move. Breathe calmly. Like, don't go, whoa. You can't, like, seem at all delighted by what you're witnessing. You just have to keep a steady breath. Don't, like, fidget. Just pretend it's just as boring as the thing that just happened before it.
It was very awkward to see American Pie in the theaters with my mother.
Oh, man.
I had the wonderful experience of watching when Sex and the City was on television, watching it with my grandma late at night when I used to live with her. And grandma has this wonderful skill, which is like anytime anything sexual would come up, she would start laughing and giggling so hard at like the mention of a penis that you couldn't even hear or like feel awkward about what was happening because she thought it was so funny. It's like it's probably one of her cutest traits. I love you, Grandma Phyllis.
She actually sounds like a great Sex in the City like companion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's perfect. I would take like giggling and laughing over those moments over just being awkward and quiet and being like, do you do that?
I mean, I think that the same things that could really ruin a date, you know, the same movie content that could really ruin a date can also really bond you, having been through a particular unexpected movie experience together, you know, coming out of a movie together and saying, oh God, wasn't that horrible? Or wasn't that awkward? Or can you even believe that we paid money to see this? Can end up being a great inside joke. So what I'm saying is there are no rules.
Well, I think one of the things that is sort of recommended to watch on dates are scary movies, because it gets your blood flowing and like your heart rate up. And it definitely releases some sort of chemicals that will bond you.
I can actually say that I watched the Lars von Trier movie Antichrist on a date, but it was
not that
fine.
Kind of horror.
No, listen,
come on.
I was too afraid to watch it alone, and so this person was willing to watch it with me. So I was like, "Thank you for bearing through this horrific experience."
And where is this person now?
I mean, I don't know, but. but it was, you know, it was fine. And it was my choice because I'm a scared person. And so when it comes to a scary movie, I definitely want someone else there. So I don't know.
On Twitter, listener Noah says, first movie date I ever had was The Terminal, starring Tom Hanks in a dollar theater in high school. Made out the whole time.
Yeah. That seems like a perfect choice because you can totally ignore it and make out with somebody.
Then he actually said after that, hey, that's not true, actually. My first date was my big fat Greek wedding. Literally never saw that girl again.
Aww. It's weird to see a wedding movie on a date. That's like jumping the gun.
Yeah. Oh, my first date was, I think, Titanic.
Ah.
Which feels like, I mean, that could be jumping the gun in terms of like
like depth of love and emotion or something, but there's a big ship and it goes under. It's kind of fun. I think that was perfect.
I was actually talking about this with a friend today, and he said that he had gone on a date to Titanic, and his date cried through the whole second half of the movie, and he sat there emotionless, and it didn't work out.
Well, okay, it was okay. So more about Titanic is that it was a double date. So it was my best friend Boris and his date, and then very cool Nick Tiemann, and I was his date, and then at the school dance, like a couple months later, Boris asked me to dance and requested that the DJ play "My Heart Will Go On," and it was like this kind of like mix up.
How
and
do
I
you
refused.
Dance to that?
Yeah, it was me and Nick's song now. Like, we couldn't do that.
But literally, how do you dance to that?
I have a very clear memory of refusing. I think it felt too intense. I know I refused to dance with Boris. I was like, this will ruin our friendship. We can't do it. Can't do it, Boris. We have a caller. Oh, no. I waited too long. I'm sorry.
Call back.
Call back, Jordan. Call us back. And Madison, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 201-209-9368. We want to hear about early movie dates, uncomfortable movie dates, movies that are perfect for dates. You know, my most dreamy date movie is, oh no, what is it?
Describe it. Actors.
Oh.
We'll figure it out.
It's like, oh, I would. Arthur.
Just say words.
I really.
They always show it at Film Forum on Valentine's Day. It's like awkward romantic quaaludes.
Someone get hot.
No. Quaaludes. Quaaludes. Modern romance.
Oh.
Okay. It's modern romance. And then who's the guy in it? It's,
I don't think I'm familiar.
I'm sorry. I got up at 4 a.m. today. It's an Albert Brooks movie, and I recommend it so strongly. And if you guys don't know it, you have to see it. They show it at Film Forum every Valentine's Day, and it's like, it feels like, it's so New York City, and all the themes in it still feel very, like, definitely resonate. There's a scene where he is going to pick up a girl for the date. They get in the car. They're on their way, and he's like, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And then, like, as they sit there listening to the radio and driving, he changes his mind about her. And he just keeps driving in a circle and then drops her right back off. He's like, I just can't do this. This is too soon after my breakup. I can't do it. And it's perfect scene. I'm, like, obsessed with that moment because I feel like I've been on so many of those dates where you're like, this is going to be great. We're going to get drinks. We're going to hang out. And then you're like, nope, need to turn this around, even if you're not in a car.
Mm-hmm. Huh. That's a good one.
Yeah, so what about movies that you like when you were younger or like now think of when you think of a perfect relationship or like at least one that illustrates an interesting relationship dynamic?
Oh, definitely His Girl Friday has a great relationship dynamic because you have the divorced husband and wife who used to also work together in the newspaper business. Mind you, this movie's from the 40s. It stars Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell. And it's free. It's in the public domain, so you can go watch it on YouTube right now. So they used to be married. They used to work in the newspaper business together. And they've sort of come back together for like one last story, and it's screwball comedy, so they talk really fast and have an amazing repartee. And I don't really want to give away the ending, but the way that they're kind of at each other's throats, yet you can tell there's a lot of mutual respect
and tension.
She is engaged to be remarried to somebody else and kind of gets wrapped back up into the world of journalism and can't get away from it, and the charming pull of Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great relationship.
I mean, I think if you're talking about Cary Grant, like, you got to go Charade. Like, that's a much healthier relationship. And they're just as chatty.
I don't know. There's a big age difference in that one.
Yeah.
My other favorite movie relationship is, and I don't think that it's a particularly healthy relationship, but I just, they're so watchable, is Wild at Heart, Sailor and Lula. Nick Cage and Laura Dern in the David Lynch movie. They are just
two kids who are on the run in a car across America and can't get enough of each other. And there's an amazing scene where Nick Cage is sort of performing karaoke for Laura Dern's character, and she is just so turned on by him and dancing to the music, and it's just an incredible like animal magnetism between them, and it's just so watchable.
My Nicolas Cage favorite relationship is Raising Arizona. They're so cute. Holly Hunter is just
And those are the, you guys are talking about movies that resonate with you right now or also when you were younger?
Oh, right now.
Yeah, I'm thinking more recently.
I feel like this is something that's so changed for me as like my dream, like the ones that resonated with me when I was a teenager, where I was like, that's what I want, that's who I am, that's what love is, and then versus right now.
What were your teenage ones?
Oh my gosh, I was so into Breakfast at Tiffany's. Oh, I watched it like over and over, and I went as Audrey Hepburn every Halloween. But it was something about this idea that I'm hopeless and broken. I'm hopeless and broken too. Well, we'll make each other better together. And that is not how I think we work as people.
No. But it's great to watch it on screen.
I know. I could never settle down. I'm going to try to settle down. We're going to give the cat a name. Oh, I love it. I wish that it was that easy. I think my, like, the couple that resonates with me in television right now is House of Cards. And I know it's kind of scandalous to say that I like this relationship. But it's the relationship between the vice president and the vice president's wife character, the Kevin Spacey character, and his gorgeous partner. I don't know. What's that actress's
name? Robin Wright.
Robin Wright.
Gorgeous and statuesque. And she has the most severe blonde haircut that I love.
Keep cutting your shorter. You'll get there.
It's blue, but I can try.
But they have this like trust and unspoken understanding. And they can just be so entirely themselves in parallel to each other. And I kind of idolize that sense of independence, not codependence, and this idea that like we're on a mission to take over the world together.
Yeah. In high school, the relationship that I actually really loved was in a movie that I was obsessed with, which was Can't Hardly Wait. And the relationship between Seth Green's character and Lauren Ambrose's character, who are like...
the outsiders.
They're both outcasts. They used to be friends and then grew apart. And then they find love on the last night of high school. And I just thought their romance was actually really cute. And that was all I wanted in high school. So that was one that I watched a lot and definitely related to, just having this sort of previous closeness and then hating each other but not sure why and realizing you liked each other all along.
Lots of folks on Twitter are chiming in about their first date movies. Karthikarala says, my first movie date was 1 hour photo. The date was good, but the relationship didn't last. Isn't that questionable?
That movie's scary. There's a really scary moment in that movie.
That's a creepy movie.
Super creepy.
Sarah says, was taken to see Twilight. He thought I might like it because sexism. I thought he liked it, so I was quiet.
Oh, man.
0 out of 10, do not recommend. So I guess he thought that she'd like it ironically, but she didn't realize that. That's great.
I love that. I love, like, intentions were not communicated, so everyone was afraid to, like, offend the other's taste.
Yeah, you really can't ironically see a movie while it's still showing in theaters, can you?
I think you can, actually.
Really?
There are some movies that you just know are going to be bad.
That reminds me. Oh, Matt, my husband, took me on a surprise date a couple years ago. And it was supposed to be like totally like, we're going to have a great time and laugh at this. And then it was revealed to be that 9/11 movie with Robert Pattinson.
Oh, God.
What is it? Always Remember, Never Forget. What is it called? And it was just such a bummer. Thank you, Matt, for the date, but...
oh. That's great. We got another great Twitter. We got another great Twitter. I just turned 50. James on Twitter says, a local cinema had a special Valentine's weekend showing of We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh.
It's what? Sold out.
What? Well, I guess when you're seeing, when it's Valentine's Day specifically, there is, you know, definitely the urge to do something anti-Valentine's Day. And that movie, I think, will make you not really want to procreate. And I could actually see why couples would go see that movie, but no,
if you do the opposite,
if you're trying to actively woo somebody through your movie choice, maybe that is not it.
On line one, we have Austin and Warren. Welcome to YOY.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Do you have a movie date to tell us about?
Yeah, one of the first dates I ever went on, I brought this girl that I really liked to see, Nanny McPhee. I don't know if you remember that movie. It was like,
yeah.
Ugly Nanny.
Yeah. With the British actress whose name I'm blanking out at the moment.
Well, didn't that turn out so good? I mean, like, nothing happened during the movie, but that was the last time I hung out with her, so.
What made you pick that movie?
I guess it had just come out, and I was getting dropped off by my parents, and I kind of didn't want them to know that I was going on a date with a girl, so that movie seemed logical, but in reality, it was.
So you think everything would have been different if you had just picked a different movie?
I really think so. Sometimes I still think about that, and I'm like, damn.
If you could have picked any movie to show her instead, what would you have picked?
If I was...
Something cool.
If I knew what I know now, I guess I would... Have you ever seen Woody Allen's movie, Midnight Summer Sex Comedy or something like that?
Midsummer Night Sex Comedy?
Yeah.
You know, I think
maybe that's not a good one either, though, because they're all in love with someone else.
But it is streaming on Netflix, which is a good way to take someone home.
I think a great way to act, like, to pick a movie is actually, you know, you start talking about film and suddenly it's like, I can't believe you haven't seen insert movie that you can't believe they haven't seen here. And then that's a great opportunity to share with them something they love. And it is kind of also a test in a way, because if it's something that you love and then they don't respond well to it, maybe you don't have the same taste in movies, which, you know, doesn't necessarily make or break a relationship, but it does maybe affect how often you will be going to the movies in your dating future.
Thanks so much.
Or the opposite could happen, and you show someone a movie and they love the movie, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, this is going to work out.
Exactly.
Oh, that's true. Good luck, Austin. Thanks so much for the call.
Yep. Have a good night.
Thanks.
All right. We can slip in a couple more calls here at 201-209-9368. We want to hear about your first movie dates, your worst movie dates, your best movie dates. There's just something that there's the movie becomes part of the experience with this other person, and there's no way to avoid it. On WFMU.org, Jeff says, something which seems like a terrible idea as one of the first movies for a couple to watch together, but actually worked really well, was the first Jackass movie. He says, maybe one thing that worked is the dynamic of choosing the movie, playing against gender stereotypes. I really wasn't at all interested in sitting through it. Kind of turned up my nose, but, you know, thought it was a crudeness I didn't need. She rented it anyways. She thought it'd be fun, and we both laughed our asses off. So
that's great.
Nice. Yeah. I think it would be bad to say, I'm not watching this. You pick this out, I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe it's that romantic movies are tough on dates because, I don't know, everyone has certain things that are, you know, maybe a trigger for them in terms of past relationships or emotions, or something can come up for somebody and seeing that on screen. So, you know, like Ksenia said, pick a horror movie, pick an action movie, pick a bad movie, like a movie you know is going to be bad. Go see The Room on a date. That's a great date movie.
Hey,
there are some creepy sex scenes in there.
But you just
if you're not ready for it.
Oh, man. What do you guys think about this? When you're hanging out with a guy and he's like, oh, you need to see this movie. You really need to see it. I've already seen it, but I'll watch you watch it.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Or I haven't seen it for a while. We'll watch it again. and he like already knows everything that's going to happen and you don't.
A guy did that with Chasing Amy, this guy I dated in college, and it's like, what is the message you're trying to send? And I think like earlier in the relationship, he like pointed out that I checked out girls. So I don't know, like that was in there as well. I don't know. It was, I don't know. I think it was a misstep.
Well, this has been fun. We still have a bit of time.
Have you guys seen the Thin Man movies? Those are so good. Like, when I saw those, I was like, that is the relationship I want and need. And my husband and I actually used a quote from it on our, like, wedding programs. And it's a little counterintuitive because it's about this detective couple who drink a lot. That seems to be their fuel. But they're also just so perfect together and, like... chatty and comfortable, and like they never let the other one I don't know, they always question the motive of the other one. And then it's a series, so like in the later ones there's this awesome scene where they go to a jazz club, but they both realize that they're too old for it. And that's how I feel sometimes.
That you're too old for certain date activities.
But it's like, I don't know, sometimes you go to a place when you're 29 and you're like, oh, I'm the oldest person here. I'm not into this anymore.
Joining us on line one is Steve in Staten Island. Welcome to YOY.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. You had a movie date you want to tell us about?
Well, I just wanted to call because when I was like 15, I used to, my girlfriend's parents used to drop her off at the movies, and I used to, like super cheap out, and I would, like, buy one ticket and then hold the door open for her.
Oh, man. And she was okay with that?
I don't know. I was, like, 15. I didn't really have much of an income, so it just seemed like it was that or no movies at all.
Do you remember what you guys would go see?
Well, honestly, we just used going to the movies as an excuse to make out mostly, so...
Yep, doing it right at 15.
The first movie we went to go see was that movie with Joaquin Phoenix and the aliens.
Signs?
Signs.
Oh, yeah. You guys are so good at that.
And then more recently I took a girl on a date to see that movie, The Future.
Uh-huh, the Miranda July movie.
Yeah, and that didn't really go over so well, especially with the cat at the end.
Oh, don't spoil it.
Yeah, we.
Yeah, I won't say anything, but yeah, I don't know. It wasn't a great date, but it turned out to be like a cool, you know, relationship after. We joked about it forever.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mutual shared experience of surviving a movie. I think it really can work.
That seems to be the big theme here.
I feel like even if you go see a bad movie as a date, if like you have the right chemistry, you could just like turn it around anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, the thing you can't really recover from is if you do start making out during the movie and then something really dreadful, violent happens and you have to do that like awkward pull away, like, can we kiss while this is happening? I'm not really sure. Thank you so much for your call. Have a great night.
All right, thanks.
All right. Well, this has been so much fun. Oh, I still have a couple more questions.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys have any movie recommendations for this weekend if couples are planning out their date night?
Ooh.
Godzilla.
Yes, Godzilla is really fun and I think would be a great date movie.
It's beautiful and like there's some emotional scenes, but it's not too sappy. I mean, it's primarily an action movie, so you can like really get into it and like hold hands during the scary parts.
And then when you go home, you can watch the original in bed.
Yes, exactly. I think monster movies monster movies make great date movies, and this is a particularly great one.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I have been joined by Eleanor Kagan and Ksenia Yarosh, hosts of the Bonnie and Maud podcast, the show that takes on film and television shows from a femme-centric perspective. Visit bonnieandmaud.com to subscribe or just search for that on iTunes.
Yeah.
You can also tweet at us at Bonnie and Maud.
You guys have some events coming up, right? Or topics that you're hoping to crowdsource?
We do. We are doing a episode. Well, the next one coming out is going to be part of a pod crawl with our friend podcasts, Read It and Weep and Proudly Resents. We're taking on the 90s Batman sequels. So we will be talking about Batman Returns with a real deal Catwoman expert. And then after that, we're doing an episode about sisterhood and siblings. And so we really would love to hear from you guys about what movies you liked watching with your siblings and also which on-screen siblings have resonated with you. So tweet at us, email us, bonnieandmaud@gmail.com, and yeah, we'll keep this discussion going.
That's great. We got a couple more comments on the playlist page. Bad Guy Zero says, my most recent girlfriend and I went to see Adventureland on our second date.
Oh, nice. Hmm. That's a great movie. It was really fun.
Cavorting with Nudist says, this says, Thin Man movies are perfect. William Powell is like the anti-Randy.
Absolutely.
Jeff says, something which turned out to be a bad pick, Team America World Police.
Turned out to be a bad pick.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm curious why.
I think it depends.
He says the puppet sex scene was creepy.
Yeah. I guess it depends on your sense of humor with that one.
I guess if you go on a date with a puppet, that might be the wrong choice.
I don't know. Puppets probably don't get to see puppet sex very often.
Mm. Although or a Muppet?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, you guys have been so great. This has been so much fun.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is really great. Everyone should stay tuned now for Dave Emery. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Here is Dave Emery, the world's favorite anti-fascist.
Dave Emery. This is side one of For the Record program number 765, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part 10, Shearing the Piglet, subtitled They're Shocked, Shocked. This is being recorded on December 15th of the year 2013. Now, the title of the program, and once again we're going to be delving into the incredibly important story surrounding Edward Snowden's, quote, disclosures, unquote. Note the quotes. And as I have noted in the past, things are fundamentally different from the way the vast majority of media outlets have been portraying them. For one thing, most of this information, the information that has been, quote, shocking people, unquote, has been on the record for a long time and or could be safely extrapolated. I've been talking about NSA and GCHQ hoovering up of electronic communications for many years, that from open source information. This is not an exercise in self-exaltation, but rather it is to point out that this information, anyway, the things that are bothering people, you know, Big Brother is monitoring your communications, blah, 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 that has been on the public record for a long time. I've been talking about it from open source, from open sources for the better part of two decades. And again, this is not an exercise in self-exaltation, but rather it is to point out that there is something very different than what people have been generally led to think. Another major aspect of this derives directly from a passage from Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler's political manifesto and, to an extent, autobiography. In Mein Kampf, Hitler wrote, most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept the thing as true. All good liars know this, therefore, and stop at nothing to achieve this end. Far from being crusaders for civil liberties and human freedom, blah, 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 people like Edward Snowden, Citizen Greenwald, who spent years as an attorney running legal interference for a bunch of stone Nazi killers, these people are, in fact, the opposite of what they are being generally represented to as being. You start, and again, I spent the first, about five shows, roughly, introducing the characters and the political milieu, my favorite word, of which they are part. That's why I did the dramatis personae programs, because when you begin examining Eddie the Friendly Spook, and again, he is an intelligence officer, and spy rhymes with lie. When you begin examining these interests, they not only are not concerned with human liberty and freedom and so forth, despite the use of the term libertarian. It's one of the things that makes this particular lie so seductive. Libertarianism itself is sort of a backdoor to fascism or corporatism, as Mussolini put it. Mussolini, who invented the term fascism and the system, described it il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. And libertarianism, despite the fact that many people of good and sincere faith have been attracted to that philosophy, libertarianism winds up being, by and large, a backdoor to fascism. And again, I know I'm repeating myself, remember that the motto of the German Nazi Party under Adolf Hitler was Freiheit und Brot, freedom and bread. You see, the Nazis were really in favor of freedom. Well, the devil was in the details, and when you start examining the milieu of Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, Ron Paul et al., you literally come to people who believe in slavery, past, present, and future. So to telescope these arguments enormously, in order to understand the nature of the forces of which Edward Snowden is part, what part of slavery do you not understand? Now, in this program, we're going to be taking a look at something that I have touched on before, and that is the fact that what the NSA has been doing, and the GCHQ, is not only standard operating procedure, but the European countries have been doing the same thing, including small European countries with fewer safeguards. The title of the program, Shearing the Piglet, comes from a delightful quote from a Russian president, Vladimir Putin, himself, by the way, a former intelligence officer, in the story Putin Defends Snowden's Stopover Rejects U.S. Drivel by Anton Doroshev, Nicole Goet, and Nathan Gill of Bloomberg.com from June 25th of this year, 2013. Putin was quoted as saying about this whole business, it's like shearing a piglet, all squealing and no wool, which there actually will be a lot of wool in the next installment. We're going to talk about the destabilization of the NSA and some of the things that I think are likely to come out of this. And ultimately, we're going to be taking a look at the assault on U.S. internet companies and some things that are likely to affect you very directly. The subtitle of the program there, Shocked, is, of course, from the movie Casablanca, starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman. At one point, Major Strasser orders Rick's Cafe closed down. And Claude Rains, playing the police chief, Louis Renault, says, I'm shocked to learn that there's gambling going on in this establishment. And then the croupier comes up to him and says, your winnings, sir. And all over Europe and all over the world, people are shocked shocked. And again, I've been talking about this stuff from open sources from the better part, for the better part of two decades. And yet everybody is shocked. Beginning with an article I've read before, this is from the New York, by way of underscoring the point I just made, the New York Times of September 6, 2001, more than 12 years ago, features this article, World Briefing, Europe, report on U.S. spy system by Suzanne Daly, D-A-L-E-Y. Now, again, this was on September 6th of 2001, 5 days before 9/11. And as we're going to see, it is the culmination. The European Parliament report was the culmination of a year-long study. That's before September of 2001. This reads in part, the United States-led spying system known as Echelon can monitor virtually every communication in the world by email, phone, or fax that bounces off a satellite, the European Parliament was told. But in reporting on a year-long study of the system, again, this story, September of 2001, but in reporting on a year-long study of the system that was prompted by concern that American companies were using data from the system to gain a competitive edge, Gerhard Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D as in dog, a German member of the parliament, said that many European countries had similar abilities. And we're going to be taking a look at exactly